Broadcasting from the police state that is Frederick City and the gridlock that is Frederick County, just outside the capital of the former Republic of the United States of America, this is the Frederick Faith Debate, sponsored by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? You can find the Faith Debate online at WFMD.com. That's WFMD for the slow writers. .com, keyword faith. There you'll find all sorts of religious links, including links to podcasts of previous Faith Debate shows. Best part of the website right there. You'll also find the Faith Debate blog on the right-hand side of the webpage. My blog is your blog, so email me, Troy Skinner at clearchannel.com. That's T-R-O-Y-S-K-I-N-N-E-R at clearchannel.com. I get lots of, like, people trying to call me Tony or even Scott Skinner. I don't even understand that. But Troy Skinner at clearchannel.com. Whatever you send me, I copy and paste it right onto the webpage. But whatever you send me, within reason. 9 fresh blog postings are uploaded each weekday. That's Monday through Friday. Do the math. 45 blog postings per week. And some of it is actually very good stuff. On our show today, Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor at Crossroads Valley Chapel.
Good to see you. How are you today?
I'm splendiferous. And also from Covenant Family, downtown Frederick, Pastor Neil Achumpong. Is that right? Now I gotta make. Oh, am I not hearing you on my? Say something again.
Good to see you.
Ah, okay. I got nervous that I lost your microphone there. That would be for a long show.
That would be a long show.
Yeah, so
half a conversation coming at you.
Yeah. So what am I reading these days? What am I reading? It's actually appropriate to the subject matter today. A book called Apparent Privilege by Steve Wright with Chris Graves. Parent privilege. How can we be better parents? How can we serve our kids in the home better? And we're going to talk, it's kind of related to that, and I'm sure there'll be an extension in which we will talk about that, but we're talking today about how the church can serve our kids better. And I joked before the start of the show, you know, kids, can't live with them, can't shoot them. So since we can't shoot them, you know, you pastors got to figure out, you know, what the church can do to better serve them and what families can do to better serve their kids.
It's interesting. That comment's a fascinating one in light of recent shootings and violence in the media. And I'm sure that'll even play into the topic today because there is so many cultural influences that young people are facing, and violence is one of them. As a matter of fact. And so the question is, what do you do? How do you care for them in the midst of a very multicultural environment?
And this topic came up because of a conversation that I had with Neil, and he has such a heart for reaching the kids, and he's got some ministry initiatives going on that he's specifically targeting going after those kids. And I thought, wow, we should probably talk about that. I think we've alluded to children issues and that sort of thing, what the church should do. But I don't know that we've ever focused specifically on that topic, and I thought it'd be good for us to tackle. So why don't we start there real quick to provide a foundation. Why such a heart for the kids?
I believe that kids represent our future, and that any generation of people who...
Whitney Houston said something to that effect once.
Generational thinkers, but we are not only thinking in the now, we would always have to think about children. Reason being that if you look at the example of Caleb, he says, give me this mountain. What was he going to do with it after 80 years old, man? And the whole idea is that because he has generations behind him, that he's expecting that those generations would one day inherit what he has. All through other scriptures, we see things that Jesus said. He says, let the children come unto me. If the master wants the kids, I believe that we ought to like them too. My heart for the children actually developed because even though our church size is not that big, we have so many children. We have about 65 to 68 children in a church at size of about 8,200 people. And to me, that is not normal. And so I had to sit down and I kept asking myself, why would God give me this many children? Why that? And so I kept praying. I said, Lord, you need to just open my eyes. And then I have three of my own. And so anytime I look at my three boys and look at the 68 other children in the church, it hits me that, listen, if you're not able to do anything for them right now, then we are not helping anything in the future. And so that is how my heart for kids all came about. And then we started looking at the kids are going to grow up. They're going to be youth. The youth are going to grow up. They're going to be adults. And so if I'm going to be able to produce better adults, then I must start right from the beginning. There are too many single parents today in Frederick.
Well, I'm doing the math. Nation. If you've got 68 children, mm-hmm. that means that you have more than three children per adult in your church.
Yes.
And so, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, is that, like, six children per family?
No, I
don't. Or you have a lot of single parents that have three kids each? Or are you just pulling in extra kids that their parents aren't even there?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't recall having one family that has six kids, but at least I can recall several families with four.
Okay.
But then we have kids who are also coming in with other parents, but their parents are actually not in church. And very often what we do is that most of the people who had joined our ministry had come as a result of their children, that we raised the parents through the children. And so that's why we have that many.
You have such a beautiful accent, right? You're from Ghana. For those that are wondering the accent you're hearing, he's from Ghana originally.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was South Baltimore. No?
No.
South Alabama?
Nah, all the way from Ghana, West Africa. But I've lived in this country for quite a while.
Yes, indeed.
Now, you said something interesting, and I thought we would end up going in this direction at some point. We're going to go to it pretty quickly, I guess.
Okay.
You talked about, you know, your church is able to reach a lot of parents through their children.
Yes.
Now, that's a practical reality because there's a bunch of kids that are being drawn there for a variety of reasons,
right.
And then it makes sense. Okay, the kids are here. Let's reach the kids. But how often is that the default position for churches? Sometimes I fear that it's one of the motivations behind a VBS, a Vacation Bible School. You know, let's get the kids from the neighborhood to come because then we can get the parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a bait and switch.
You think that's a bad motivation?
And I'm not so sure that we should be using the kids to get the parents. I think the ideal, if that's the way it works out, it's a practical reality. It is what it is.
I believe
that. But wouldn't the ideal be to get the parents and reach the kids through the parents? Wouldn't that be a better?
Either way, it doesn't matter. What matters is throughout the scriptures, there are clear examples where there are others who are reached, like children who are reached through parents. And then there are parents who are reached through the children. For example, in Mark chapter 9, there is a boy who had a seizure, has a demonic influence, and it was the father who brought the boy to Jesus. But then when he showed up, he found that he had more problems than his own boy. And he asked Jesus, he says, Lord, for everything you said, I believe, but help my unbelief.
Sure.
It sounds like the guy did not believe, or maybe part of him did believe. The other part does not believe.
Right.
Now, that's a clear example.
Just like all of us, by the way, I think, right?
Yeah.
We all struggle with that.
Yeah.
And so I believe that reaching kids through parents and reaching parents through kids should go hand in hand. And if you're going to reach the children, you must, first of all, always try and reach the parents first because they become the first line of action. If they get it wrong, very often the kids are going to get
it. It's so interesting to me that you have a preference. Like, I don't know that I've ever thought to myself of a preference. Why do you feel like parents should be reached first or you know, like that's ideal?
Yeah, because...
Go ahead.
Look at it this way. Because of the authority of the home, if you reach the parent first, it's very easy for parents to bring children along. But then it's not very easy for kids to convince their parents, I need you to go with me.
Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think, the spiritual head of the home is going to be, you know, the father and the mother, not the kids, right? That's going to be the head of the home. Ideally, in my view, it's going to be the father first, you know, the mother, 1A, or whatever, right? The father first, the husband and wife together first, kind of a thing. And that's not going to happen if the kids are the ones that are being reached. So you're almost asking the kids to go evangelize their parents, which is fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but I don't think that's the normative way, right? That's not the...
Well, it's so interesting
and
that
it's
you say normative because
and
the gospel isn't sent to the healthy.
Yeah.
It's sent to the sick, right? Jesus
but in this
didn't
case,
come
we're talking
the healthy.
About parents and kids
And
who
if
are
you've
sick.
Got a healthy family, you know, then I don't know that the gospel... I mean, the gospel is toward anybody that doesn't know God through Christ, okay? It is towards everybody, but... We're sent by Christ to the poor, to the broken, to the widow, the orphan. And in that case, then you're sent to those that are in broken families and that somehow the gospel is the answer to the brokenness that is in the
family.
Yeah,
but you just mentioned an orphan. An orphan doesn't have parents, right?
Okay, but how many families, this is precisely where I'm going, though, because how many families are there where there's significant dysfunction? So maybe they're not an official orphan, but at the end of the day, there's enough brokenness that the kid is looking for something and needs something. And, you know, even the school system is set up that way. You even read this all through, you know, political policy that is geared towards youth, the recognition why you just can't trust the parents to do it. You know, you can't trust the parents to talk to the kids about sex, so we better do it for them. You can't trust the parents to teach kids about morality, so we better do it. You know, and so we're you know, the school system, society's picking up the pieces for all of these broken families. And the reality is that there are a ton of broken families out there. And single parenthood has been scientifically proven to not be anywhere near as effective as two-parent families, and that's pervasive.
But then does the church step in and do just what you were saying you don't like about what the public school system is doing? Does the church step in and replace the parents?
Well,
the parents aren't taking care of it, so the church will step in.
I don't know that I said that.
Right?
I didn't know that I said that I didn't like it. I'm just recognizing that they're doing it. And they're doing it because even they recognize that there's a broken society.
Yeah, but which came first?
The absence of
chicken or the egg,
right? In the absence,
that's a good question. I mean, Cain and Abel came first. The sin came first, right? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, in the absence of leadership, anybody who thinks he can lead would jump in, and that's what is going on with the public schools. And if the church fails to step in, then the secular world is going to do it. The school system is going to do it. And very often, they tend to have a secular approach. But the family was originally put in place by God. If it's going to come together and it's going to work well, it has to be done by God's approach. And very often, in church also, we have many people in church who are dysfunctional. So very often, they feel that they don't have enough knowledge to be able to step in. But my appeal is that it starts with one step.
Mm-hmm.
For every Bill Gates you'd see, you would suddenly know that there is some, he has a mentor. We need to come up with that understanding that parents are the first mentors in the life of their own.
You know, you said something just a second ago that I'm generally in agreement, like, with what you're talking about the importance of parenting. But you said if the church doesn't do it, then the world will step in. And that's not my experience. My experience is that the world isn't waiting for the church to see if the church is going to step in or not. The world is already in, whether we go for it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, and that was true way back from the beginning. I mean, when the church showed up on the scene, it didn't show up to a world that was doing nothing to impact the next generation. They had all kinds of ideas about how they would impact the next generation in the Roman Empire and the Greek Empire and the Persian Empire. You know, the world has its ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to say, well, you know, if we don't do it, then the world's going to step in, I think is a faulty mentality. The world is not waiting around to see what the church does. The world is in, and the world is influencing, and it's doing it aggressively about every issue that's out there. Homosexuality, you know, about whether or not there is a God, about creation versus evolution. I mean, sex outside of marriage. On every issue, they are in, and they are in strong. And so I just don't think they're waiting for us.
That's Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor at Crossroads Valley Chapel, the beautifully accented man from originally from Ghana that you're hearing on the show today is
yes.
Neil Achapong. He's the I put the accent on the wrong syllable on that pronunciation of your name. I apologize. He's a pastor at Covenant Family Church in downtown Frederick, right at the corner of Market and 2nd Street, I believe, right?
That's right, yes. Right there. Wave high when you drive by. Yeah,
and your church has moved recently.
We're over on East 4th Street now, 206 East 4th Street. So we're only two blocks away from you now.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. We're actually doing a VBS here shortly, so yeah.
So here's the deal. On Sundays now, Jonathan and Neil, both of you, your job, Jonathan, is to get your congregation to sing so loud
that we can hear
that they can hear you. And same thing, Neil, you got to sing so loud that they're knocking on your door. Would you guys simmer down over here? We can hear you two blocks away.
All of a sudden, it sounds like we're talking about the youth ministry of churches today.
Yeah. Well, but going back, you know, the Bible talks about, again, the whole normative idea. You know, the Bible talks about training up the children in the way they shall go.
Yeah.
right? And if you're feeding them the word, then they won't depart from the way that they're supposed to go.
Yeah.
Well, who's that charge given to? That charge is given to the parents. So I think
Indeed.
The normative ideal thing is that, you know, the family is the building block for society.
Yeah.
And the church should be supporting that.
Yeah.
And my concern is the world has stepped in. The secular, you know, world, the school system, whatever, the state has stepped in and has, well, parents can't do it, we're going to do it. And I get nervous sometimes the church is contributing to that mindset. Okay, the parents have abdicated responsibility in a lot of cases. We let them off the hook too easily.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
And so the
church, I think you're taking it too far. Should I let you give your argument first and then,
no,
and then I'll give a response? The thing
how am I taking it too far?
Well, there's two things going on here, which I feel like are always going on in the church. The one thing is that we want to preach the gospel and reach the world for the gospel. The other thing is that we're wanting to protect our Christian kids from un-Christian kids. And I'm not saying that you go that far, but I'm saying you have two things always going on. And one is that you're teaching those that are already in the church to do what is right. But then the other thing is that you're preaching the gospel. And so certainly we need to teach the parents that are in the church to take responsibility, not abdicate it either to the church or to the public school system. But if we have kids that are out there that are open, I mean, the discipleship and evangelism, we got to be doing both of those. And so discipleship, let's disciple the parents to take the responsibility. But if there are kids that for whatever reason are stuck from broken homes, then let us not hesitate for a moment to get in there and share the gospel. Because all of the divorce today in society, all the no-fault divorce has created a widowed society. All these single moms, it's just like they're widows, and they're out there, and they can barely make it financially. Their kids aren't doing as well in school. I mean, it's a widowed society across the board. And so I say that is a wide-open opportunity for the church to come in and say, whatever we can do to help, let's do it. And at the same time, as the parents get saved, look, let's be in marriages that are genuine, and let's do the parenting. Let's take responsibility for the parenting.
Yeah, we're going off on a bit of a tangent, but I'm gonna share the thought while it's on my mind. We'll swing back around to the prepared subject matter
in
a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably not.
I believe that. Yeah,
I think it's all relevant. So.
But the church should be, again, this is normative ideal kind of stuff in my mind. All right, and you might disagree with me. The church, you as pastors, should be standing up on Sundays, and you should be preaching the gospel.
Yeah,
that is your primary job on Sunday during the worship service, is to share the gospel with the people of God.
Amen.
And those that might be around that aren't people of God yet, but they're interested or they're confused. They might think they're a Christian and they're not, whatever.
Amen.
But you're charged with preaching the gospel.
Okay.
The people who are hearing you are charged with getting it.
Yeah.
I get the gospel.
Yeah.
Right, you give it, they get it.
Yeah.
And then once they get it, they catch fire with it and they go live it.
Amen.
And through their living it, they have opportunity then to go evangelize the nations.
Amen.
So if you've got 68 kids in your church, for example, Neil, you have 68 little evangelists. Mm-hmm. Right? And so you don't have to say, let's figure out a pro. I'm not saying you're doing this, by the way. Mm-hmm. Maybe you are, maybe you're not, but we haven't gotten to that yet. I figure we get to this subject matter way later in the discussion.
Yeah. But no.
But if you equip those kids to be good little Christians, and they're going out and they're living gospel-centered lives, and they're sharing their faith with others, and people are like, man, I punched you in the nose, and you seemed like you didn't, you know, strike back the way kids normally would. What's that all about? Well, my pastor tells me that Jesus would have me do this, and I listen to what pastor says about Jesus because he's my savior. They have this huge opportunity. The kids are reaching the kids. The church doesn't have to top down create a program to reach the kids that bypasses the parents.
Yes.
See, that's again, it's normative though. I understand there are realities. It's sticky. It's messy. It's a broken world. And it's not as simple as that. But
that is the basic thing that we are trying to do. For example, if I went down to a school system and said, let's have a prayer time. It's against the rules. If I taught the kids how to have their own prayer club, then they can do it because they are allowed to. Now, that is the approach that I believe that we need to take at the moment, because there are too many regulations in our system that stops pastors, stops so many other people to get in. So if I can train a bunch of, say, 20 kids, and they understand that we can pray, and prayer is important, and they've seen some results when they pray, and those kids start prayer clubs in the schools, they start some other things to reach their own peers, I believe we will be able to infiltrate. The problem is, when you go to church, for example, And you ask the average pastor, what is the size of your congregation? He only counts adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when we stand in the presence of God, there's no difference between an adult soul and a child soul. God is going to judge us.
Interestingly, though, when you ask Jonathan, at least when I've heard him answer those kinds of questions, he has a tendency to answer in terms of families.
Yes.
Right. We have X number of families. We have, you know, 20 mm-hmm. families, 50 families, however many families you have. I don't
Which
know
is always,
what it is now. But he doesn't say a number and yes. count up the adults. It's, he counts in his head how many families. So,
yeah.
Which I think is a good model. I think mm-hmm. that's actually speaking to what I'm saying, the idea, the mentality of the church towards the hearers yeah. and the receivers of the message should be.
And if a local church is built on the family, it is always better. The reason is if daddy and mommy and all the kids are hearing from the same source,
mm-hmm.
then it's very easy to model things in that family. Unfortunately, today in society, we have daddy go to church elsewhere, the kids are somewhere else, and mommy goes elsewhere.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Difficult. Maybe next week's show,
I
want to talk about that.
I think that Neil is coming from a perspective where he has in front of him where 3/5 of his congregation is youth. And so as he comes on the show today, as he's praying day in and day out, he's thinking, this is what God's given me. What am I going to do with it? Whereas what you're talking about, Troy, is I feel like you're talking about a situation where the church is a big church and there's families that are saying, hey, how come you don't have a better youth program? And the church, instead of in that situation saying, look, parents, you know, where the kids are maybe like 1/3 of the congregation or maybe 1/2 of the congregation, look, parents, proper youth ministry is parenting. Not a big youth ministry where we do all these fun games and everybody's, you know, discipled by everybody else. But a proper youth ministry is where the parents are doing the ministry. And I agree with you that the tendency in churches, in order to look good, is to have this youth ministry that's, you know, like the best thing on the block, you know. And they do it not for outreach purposes, but they do it so that the parents that are coming feel like the church is going to take care of their kids for them.
Yeah.
And I agree that is a mentality that has slipped into the church and that is a broken mm-hmm. mentality mm-hmm. and that is driven by kind of a seeker sensitive, you know, I picked this church go. Because it's got a better youth program than that
there
church instead of saying that, you know, ultimately it's not up to a youth program in a church how my kids are going to turn out. It's up to how my wife and I take care of them each and every day and how we interact with them.
Yeah, and that is where let me just step in with it. That's why we are saying that the approach in molding this kid starts with every parent becoming a mentor to his own child. Or some other parent will have to take another child and try to mentor them.
Yeah, because as you were describing to me ahead of time, I was asking you, you're not describing a youth program that is like this fun and games thing. You're describing something that is mentoring intensive.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not even sure how you can do it because you've got 2/3 of your congregation.
What we have done is we already began and we took an age group, right? Because we can't go far down. So we took an age group.
You can't go what?
Like we can't go, say, far down with because of the number of parents that are available, we have to just choose a certain block of people and start mentoring them.
Sure.
And then over a period, then
you
we can
only
shift
do
towards,
so much, right? I'm with you, yeah.
And what we did was to start in terms of professional work. How are these kids choosing which college to go? Are they making choices for the future? And then we put it one-on-one. I have one boy, and he's not my son. And I'm actually mentoring the boy. And I said, listen, even though I'm a pastor mentoring you, you don't need to be a pastor. And the first thing we're trying to do I'm doing with him is to help him recognize all his abilities. What is it that you can do best? The first thing he told me is, Pastor, I play basketball. I said, your height is not going to make it work. I said, let's look at other things.
And a father's the one that has to communicate those things.
Yes. And then most of the kids that we're dealing with, some of them have parents, but the parents are just there. They're not doing anything. So this is where we are saying, let all the adults in the church step into some kind of relationships, some kind of mentorship program, and start mentoring these young people.
I'm excited to have a chance to talk about that more next week, because most churches are not doing that. And I talk to people who listen to this show, and I know they're listening because they'll parrot back something they heard. They like something we did, don't like something we did. Usually it's, you know, something you said, Jonathan. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
You know, but I know they're listening, and I can hear it in their head right now. They say, well, that's not my church. Let me ask you this.
Uh-oh.
Does your church have a youth group that is designed and configured in such a way that it would attract neighborhood kids in addition to your church community, right, with fun and games and things like that, plus some teaching, right? You have that, but you don't have the adult equivalent. Does your church have something like that for teens and youth? Do you have vacation Bible school for adults at your church? Do you have a Sunday evening rec program where community adults will show up and have a good time and, oh, by the way, hear the gospel? Do you have that at your church too? If not, you're guilty as charged. I'm sorry. It's just, it's true. Putman Plumbing and Heating is our sponsor. Thanks for listening. Jonathan Schweitzer, Neil Achampong. I'm Troy Skinner at the Faith Debate. Until next week, God bless.
Faith and hope, words that walk hand in hand through the lives of everyone touched by breast cancer. Putman Plumbing honors the courageous battle being fought by the special women in your life by donating $10 from every October service call. Look for our technicians wearing pink bow ties. PutmanPlumbing.com.